Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yo, what's going on? What's going on? This is your host here, James Bell. And we are here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show, powered by Blog Talk Radio through the MRN Broadcasting Channel. The number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on queue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. Pretty much have it going on here, remote location, but still able to get through with the show. You know, there's a few things here to talk about over the course of the week. As we had like a few fights here over this past weekend and a lot of things to basically talk about within those fights. So we'll be pretty much getting into it here in a few moments. But I know that we had fight cards on HBO and on Showtime this weekend with the likes of Lomachenko fighting in the main event on HBO. And we also had Willie Nelson and Demetrius Andrade on one other card here with Ruslan Provodnikov fighting also in the main event that was at Verona, New York, while that Vasyl Lomachenko card was at the Madison Square Garden Arena. And this is basically something that, you know, they usually have every weekend for the Puerto Rican Day Parade, but with Miguel Cotto not being able to fight this weekend, they had someone else there for that fight in Madison Square Garden. So the main arena was not available, but they still were able to have a fight there. So, have to see what else is going up here. See what else there is going on here, because it's looking like maybe having some technical difficulties here and whatnot. I don't think it's really anything much going on. But in the meantime, I'm going to see if I can run a commercial break here in just a minute. So I'll just run this commercial break, and then we'll get right back into the show. This is the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch other callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know what it is. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes,
no, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look it up. I'll wait.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston will have the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestone Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcast Network. Better than diamond rings. That's why we're
here to sing football. Jameis Winston is just stupid.
Back here live on the Bucks Sports Radio Show. Number to dial in, 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Pretty much getting into it here. And just going to be talking about, you know, what went down over in the Madison Square Garden here first as, you know, HBO Top Rank hosted a, you know, a boxing event there in Madison Square Garden. Wasn't really the main arena as it usually is around this time during the first or second weekend of June, as, you know, that's kind of like a thing for Miguel Cotto, but weren't able to set up a fight in time for that. So we went on ahead and booked it anyway and put in Roman Rocky Martinez, who was the WBO Super Featherweight Champion, going up against the decorated amateur fighter Vasyl Lomachenko, who, you know, came in there at, you know, just 5-1. But, of course, a lot of people know the history of Vasyl Lomachenko and his decorated amateur career, basically only losing two amateur fights in, like, out of, like, 500 or so, 400, 500. He, you know, already fought, like, a minor professional fight. And he, you know, also fought Orlando Salido, basically in his third or fourth fight for, you know, a featherweight championship. He did lose that fight, but there were a few people that, you know, kind of thought that he won that fight. But he ended up moving on after that to fight Gary Russell Jr., and defeated Gary Russell Jr. To win the belts, and, you know, defended, you know, that a couple of times, then eventually moved up in weight to, I think it was, what, like 126 there, to fight Roman Rocky Martinez. Of course, you know, a lot of boxing fans know Rocky Martinez from the recent bouts that he's had with Salido, a couple of classic fights there. You know, the last fight between him and Orlando Salido being a draw there. But, and of course, we saw what happened there last weekend with Orlando Salido and Francisco Vargas, as we kind of anticipated that that would be a, you know, fight of the year candidate before it went down. And it was like back and forth from round one to round 12. But you saw what the result was with that one.
And then now here we go next week with these two guys here, Vasyl Lomachenko and Raquel Martinez going at it. And I think, I mean, this one here, we kind of like Lomachenko to really do his due. I think that, you know, when you have a guy with a boxing pedigree like Vasyl Lomachenko going up against a fighter like Raquel Martinez, you know, you gotta, you know, favor somebody like Lomachenko in this fight. You know, to me, when it's a boxer against a fighter, all it is basically on the boxer. If the boxer makes a mistake, then he'll get chin checked. But if he stays with his game and, you know, does what he's able to do, he should be able to have an easy fight. And to see that fight there between Lomachenko and Rocky Martinez, I mean, Lomachenko pretty much was able to, you know, execute everything he really needed to do out there, especially when it came to, you know, rounds three and four before that fifth round. I mean, three and four, he was able to get a good number of big shots in, good number of, you know, combos in. He was a faster fighter, he was a quicker fighter. The way that he moved laterally to his left and to his right was something to watch. You know, he was able to, you know, do a couple of two-punch combos, move to his right, and then get, like, another good right hook in or do a two-punch combo, move to his left, and then get a good left hook in and really ended up damaging Rocky Martinez. And there really wasn't much that Martinez could do. So in that fifth round when he was able to get that, you know, two-punch combo win, that pretty much, and knocked down Rocky Martinez. It was probably the best thing for Rocky Martinez to stay down there on the canvas and take that full 10 count, because it was eventually going to be a fight stoppage because he was, Lomachenko was too much for the likes of Rocky Martinez. And, you know, he ended up scoring that victory there against them to win the WBO version of the super, I think it was the super featherweight championship there. So Vasyl Lomachenko ends up moving to six wins, and it was just one loss on his career, defeating Rocky Martinez there. So, and he'll be moving to, you know, I'd say, you know, bigger and better things. I don't necessarily think that he will have that rematch against Orlando Salido, as, you know, a lot of people are thinking. I don't see him being I don't see that being a fight that'll be attractive in comparison to a rematch between Orlando Salido and Francisco Vargas. So with that, I think that, you know, Lomachenko will defend his WBO super featherweight championship against somebody else, I would think. And I think that Salido against Francisco Vargas will be the more attractive fight there. So you have, like I said, Lomachenko moving to six wins and just one loss, with Rocky Martinez falling to 29-3 with three draws, I think, there. I'll get back to Lomachenko here in a bit, because there has been, like, a topic in comparison to, you know, guys like, you know, Lomachenko and his extensive amateur background in comparison to other fighters that have had a long amateur background but have had more fights, but have gotten more criticism in comparison to Vasyl Lomachenko. Moving on here, I'm gonna switch to the card that was, you know, basically on Showtime, as we had like a couple of fights there that were pretty much on profile for, you know, that Showtime card. as we had something going down there in the Turning Stone Resort and Casino in Verona, New York, which is a pretty little drive up from New York City. It's, you know, pretty much in upstate New York. And Showtime, I had them a boxing card as they had Demetrius Andrade, who was, you know, an undefeated guy there. He was 22-0 going up against Willie Nelson, who was at 25-2. Those that knew Willie Nelson. Willie Nelson was one guy that, you know, scored a notable quote-unquote upset win, TKO win over who was then undefeated Tony Harrison at the Sundome in Tampa on July 11th. And he was able to, you know, move on and, you know, have another fight there, well, have another fight in March. And then they matched him up here against Demetrius Andrade here at the 154-pound division. So if Willie Nelson was able to get score a win against Andrade, then he would, you know, move up in the ranks and be probably, you know, amongst the top six or seven, I don't know, maybe the top seven or so, in a very loaded 154-pound division where, you know, a few weeks ago we saw pretty much six of the best super welterweights, you know, out there as you had, you know, Trout going up against, you know, Jamel going up against, who it was, John Jackson. And you had, you know, Baines Materazian against, excuse me, you know, Baines was against Arizona Dilar. So you had those six guys going up against each other. They're 154. And, you know, Demetrius Andrade is, you know, one of those undefeated prospects that's pretty much, I would say, on the outside looking in from the Charlo brothers, from the likes of J-Rock, Julian Williams, that are among the best at 154. But here, Demetrius Andrade was able to, you know, go up there against Willie Nelson. He basically had the upper hand in the fight. Even though, you know, Nelson was a taller fighter and had the longer reach, there wasn't anything that, you know, kind of was a significant advantage to him. As, you know, Demetrius Andrade was able to stay undefeated, getting the TKO victory against him. All right, now we got Erie Gold 202 here with us. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, man? It's World Rank.
What's going on there, World Rank?
Not much. Just catching up from yesterday's action and just saying what's good.
Yeah, yeah, I was just catching up with everything. I went through the main event that was on HBO with Rocky Martinez and Vasyl Lomachenko, and then I was about to go over the two fights that were on Showtime. First, starting off with Demetrius Andrade and Willie Nelson. You know, Andrade was able to score that TKO victory over Willie Nelson. I think it would have been a shot for, you know, Willie Nelson to get into the major ranks in 154, which is loaded with all the guys that I mentioned with that triple header that was on Showtime a couple of weeks ago. But Andrade was able to, you know, score the TKO victory. I'm not necessarily sure what's going to happen here with Andrade because, I mean, with him being, you know, a Rock Nation sports guy, and with the exception of Andrade, I don't really see many of these Rock Nation fighters getting the, you know, big fights that they need in order to be amongst the best in their division and, you know, possibly reach superstardom. So, what do you think about that Andrade Willie Nelson fight?
I think I think he's on the right side because he was on Showtime yesterday, so I think he's on the right track. So that tells me that the fight can be made. You know, if they're made, is a different story. In terms of the fight yesterday, from a good layoff, I think it was a good matchup. Andre looked real good yesterday. He could not miss with the uppercuts. The uppercuts that he was landing, basically anything that he threw yesterday was hitting the mark. Nelson's a pretty decent fighter. I don't know, his style was made to order for me for Andre, because he's a tall, rangy guy, but he doesn't use his jab, he doesn't use his size
right.
a lot. So it was real,
yeah.
It was made to order for Andre. But Andre looked good. Really interesting to see what he does going forward, because he did what he's supposed to do. He was favored in the fight, but he did look good, and it was. You even seen a little adversity. He got hit with an uppercut. I think it was the third round that kind of buzzed him. He took it well. He knew when to hold. That's always a good barometer to see how good a fighter handles things once he gets hurt. Do they hold, or what other tactics do they use? And he held, so I think he knows how to do what needs to be done when he's hurt. So it was a good showing all the way on.
Yeah. The thing here with like Willie Nelson, like you were saying there, with him getting caught with the uppercuts by Andre, it was like you were saying, Willie Nelson was like the taller, rangier fighter, supposedly with this measurement, 6'3" with a 74, arm reach from the armpit to the end of the fist, but he's not able to use the jab well or use his length. That really won't work much against a guy that's a smaller fighter that knows how to get to him and get to the inside if he needs to. With that being said, Andre was able to, get work in on the inside and, use his tactics. And, like you said, while he was able to, get buzzed a little bit by Willie Nelson, he was able to, grab and, grasp hold. In order to, get himself back into the game.
Yeah. He's been out for a while, so his opponents beforehand wasn't really that good, but, he held the belt, and then somehow he gave it up. I don't remember the exacts of why he gave up the belt. But I know there was a Charlo fight that was scheduled that did for whatever reason didn't play out.
Yeah.
So hopefully,
yeah.
That can they can go back to that. And he was calling out Charlo yesterday. So what's your thoughts in terms of what do you think he'll do in terms of the Charlos, the Lars, the Canelos? What do you think in terms of, is he definitely on that level, or do we need to see more in your opinion?
I think he is on the level of the Charlos at the very least. To me, I don't think that either Charlo, is that impressive to say they're, flat out the best at the 154-pound division, and there's like a good gap between them two and the next guy, or, them two and, J-Rock Williams or Demetrius Andrade or, even Austin Trout. Like I was saying a couple of weeks ago, that Charlo-Trout fight was one of the best fights, back and forth fights that I've seen in a while at 154 pounds. And it's not like, even though, Arizlandi Lares, out there is probably known as, one of the best guys out there in 154, it's not like he clearly, makes himself out to be the best in every fight that Lara fights. It's, kind of like a hard fight to, hard fight to gauge, hard fight to score, especially if you're, a watcher of the sport that, it was kind of like more into the action instead of the whole technical type of thing. So I think Andre pretty much has a shot against any one of those, belt holders that are out there at 154 pounds. It's just a matter of, matching them up with any of those guys. I think, the one that won the WBC championship is the one that's the most vulnerable out of all the belt holders. So if he's able to get, a shot against him, I think he would have a good chance to win that title.
I definitely agree. But what I will say is, he did what he was supposed to do. He was a big favorite in the fight. I'm not saying that he's not the good, but what I will say is, you know, there's always a lot of hype after a fight, in terms of just in terms of hype after someone wins or loses. There's always overratedness or underratedness of the fighter. I do agree with you that he's on that level, but I wouldn't say let's crown him the best guy at 154 over just this one fight, because again, he was a big favorite in this fight. I would like to see him more so in, you know, in the names that we mentioned. So I do give him credit, but at the same time, we don't want to give him too much credit, because he wasn't a guy with in with the guy who was tough, you know, who's a good B level fighter, but you know, I would like to see him in 50-50 fights.
Yeah, I think him against Jermell Charlo would be a very, very good fight that I think he would have a good shot at. To me, Jermell Charlo is, you know, he's the IBF super welterweight champion, but to me, once he comes in the ring, he comes in the ring as almost a middleweight, or some have said he has been as big as a super middleweight. Of course, there's been, like I was mentioning in a couple of shows earlier, I mean, there's been pictures of, you know, the Charlos with, you know, Canelo, or the Charlos with Andre Ward. And, you know, Jermell Charlo is pretty much bigger than all of them, you know. So when it comes to the ring, I'm like, he's about like 168, 170 pounds going in the ring out there, going up against 154 pounders. So, I mean, to me, I think that if Andre is, you know, to get one of those belts, I think he needs to go after Jermell Charlo and see if he can get that WBC belt, and see if he's able to, be a champion in the 154-pound division. Just here real quick, we got another person on here. Here we go, 813. What's going on with you?
Hey, what up, JBZ? Everybody, this is Paul Chapo.
Hey, what's going on, Mr. Promoter? Doing good, man. Doing good. We're getting on this thing here with Demetrius Andrade and his TKO. Really 154 pounds, and seeing his potential matchup with me afterwards, if he's able to go after the belt holders. You know, we talked about the Charlo brothers and Arizlandi Lara. Of course, we ain't really talking about the current WBO, super welterweight title holder, because there may be talk that that guy might be able to get the most lucrative fight of his career, which he really shouldn't, but that's for a whole other thing to talk about. But when it comes to the Charlos and Lara, I'm not sure if you caught Andrade there, if you got any highlights of Andrade's fight against Willie Nelson, but what did you think of him?
Well, I didn't actually see the fight. I already read in detail about it. So, for one, I'm glad to see that Andre emerged victorious. He's one of those, I would say, mysterious names that's been out there. We know about him. Accomplishments to date has been limited and everything. And what I mean by that is that, you know, he's been around. His name's been there, but he's only done so much in the sport. He puts me in mind of the other guy that I believe is from New York. I forget what's this guy's name, the guy that had Danny Jacobs. He puts me in mind of his career in a sense, because he's been out there for a while. He's established. He's a known fighter. But, I mean, the difference with Jacobs, he had cancer. We knew that. That's what took him out of the scene, out of the spotlight, to in a sense. But these are two people mysterious to me, because we've known them for a while. But yet, like I said, their accomplishments are not minimal at best at this point. So, for one, I'm glad to see the kid get the win last night. And I think the world of him, he has a lot of talent, just like Danny Jacobs does. And we want to see them emerge. And like I said, just like I said at the beginning of the year, it's just so interesting to sit back and see these fights take place, because that's going to figure out the middleweight puzzle for us, the super middleweight puzzle, the junior middleweight puzzle, because all these guys are within that same class and everything, and we're looking for someone ultimately that's going to produce a fight, a solid fighter for Triple G, you know. So I'm not saying that these guys are ready right now. I'm not saying that. But they're certainly within that realm of the class and everything. So I'm glad to see him get a win. I'm glad to see him keep his name out there and keep it relevant with a good win. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, my thing is at least he's Andre was able to get back into the game, you know, get his name out there. I mean, he did have, you know, one fight, you know, late last year that, you know, not a lot of people really, you know, paid attention to it that much because it was kind of like a, you know, unknown type of fighter. But, you know, I think, you know, he has the skills to be one of the best guys there at 154 pounds and face the likes of the Charlos and you know, Arisandi Lara. It's just a matter of, you know, being able to get the fight against any of those guys. I think that, you know, Jamal may be going up there against J-Rock. I think they're really going to see if they can put that fight together, so that we'll finally see, you know, J-Rock get a fight against one of those title holders. So with that being said, that leaves, you know, the other Charlo there, Jermell Charlo, available for Demetrius Andre to go ahead and fight. So if he's able to get that fight, then, you know, that would be a good thing for him to at least gain another belt in that division. I think you have a very good chance to get that. Just seeing here, we got another person on the line here, area code 443. What's going on with you?
Hello?
Yeah, 443.
Yeah, speak. Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, what's going on? Hey, is this on?
All right.
Hold on, who is this?
This is Bill.
Yeah, what's going on? How you doing?
All right, how are you? Okay.
Yeah, good,
man,
good.
I just saw the jump in conversation with you guys. You know, I heard you, the last thing I heard was just basically you were saying something about Andre, you know.
Yeah.
Well, as far as my opinion, I have to see more of Andre. You know, he's been real inactive here lately, and you really can't gauge him on Willie Nelson, to be honest with you. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Not Willie Nelson, really. This guy, you can beat him with a wet noodle. So I'm just saying, I mean, I'm not, you know, so like I said, I have to see more of them. But I'll tell you one thing I did see last night that was kind of alarming. And that is, for me personally, I think it's over for Povotnikov.
I was gonna go into that fight, but he's done.
I mean, all he has is a good brawl, and they say the last thing to go with a shot fighter is his punch. Well, that's gone too. So I mean, really, nothing else you can do with him. We don't need to see him anymore. We get it. It's over. And honestly, Molina really didn't look good. It's just that Povotnikov looked that bad. That's all it really was. Now, Molina, I think, won a little belt out of that situation. He's going to keep that about 15 seconds. You know, I guarantee whoever he fights next, if it's somebody of any quality, he will not keep that belt.
I mean, I ain't even much know that that actual fight was, you know, basically for a, for any type of belt.
I think he won a little belt.
That was basically Provotnikov's last little thing where he would be
definitely his last shot. It was.
Fight,
it totally
that,
was.
In that division, you know.
Yeah, it was.
And he was still not able to come out there as the victor.
Exactly. I mean, really, it was the table was set for Provotnikov. That was an appetizer.
Yeah,
You know,
yeah,
that's
think,
all it was.
I think what was happening there was it was that, you know, I don't know if it was like any truth to this or not, but, you know, there was, you know, buzz around the, you know, message boards and talk or whatever
yeah.
it is, social media that,
yeah.
you know, Provodnikov was almost in line to get a fight with Adrian Broner. And I'm like, wait,
you
what?
You know
huh?
what? That would have been a total mismatch anyway. Not saying
yeah.
that Broner's all that. But, I mean, come on, man. If you can box a little bit, you're going to outbox Provodnikov. And Bronner would have had an easy time with him. That would have been target practice.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically somebody, the boxing gods somewhere love Provodnikov,
mm-hmm.
and they're really trying to sell this guy, but it's not working. And last night, like you said, I mean, the wheels came off of that gravy train. It's just no, there's nothing else they can do with them.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't ever need to see him on network television again.
Yeah, and I think what really kind of like told like how Provodnikov was pretty much on the decline was he had that fight, you know, last year against Matisse over there in Verona,
right?
And he wasn't able to get past that, and then later on that year you saw Matisse basically get dusted.
That's true.
You know, there by who is it that he got?
Victor Postol. Yeah.
And so when you see something like that, I'm like, there wasn't really much left from Provodnikov after that. So,
and he had a good brawl for a minute. But those type of
yeah.
fighters don't have longevity. You saw the same
yeah.
thing with Brandon Rios.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And so,
no.
you know, once all of that, you know, is basically taken out of him, you really don't have much of a fighter there. So, you know, a guy like John Molina, you know, if you're at the top of your game or whatever it is, you should be able to take out John Molina, even if he's having, like, some type of punch. You know, it's not
which
like John
true.
Molina is a real boxer, you know.
You got like a little, I don't know what it is. You got like a lot of noise in your background for some reason at times.
All right. Hold on a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, let me see if that'll work right there.
You're good now.
Yeah,
man. But like you said, John Molina was there to be an opponent, you know, and he messed around and won. But now John Molina, what my problem is with him, you can clearly see John Molina is not a cerebral fighter. He's not a thinking fighter. He's just out
not
there swinging. He's just out there trying to survive. He's just basically trying to fight you off of him. That's what he's doing. He has no setup, no game plan whatsoever. And even if somebody gives him one, he can't stick to it. I just don't think he's a guy that can think in the ring. That's the biggest problem
right.
with him. He's not a thinking
yeah.
fighter by any means.
When he took
Mickey Bay out late in that fight, I watched that fight with my youngest son because he watches all the fights with me. You know, he's 24, but he loves boxing. And that fight, I told him in the second round, I said, he can get Bay out of there. I said, all he has to do is hook off the jab. It took him 8 rounds to do it. He did
oh, wow.
that very thing in the 10th round. When I said it in the second round, he could have got that fight over with then the same way. He just can't think
yeah.
in the ring.
Yeah, he doesn't make any type of adjustments, sir. He doesn't have a – I was going to say he doesn't have a secondary weapon, but I don't even know if he even has a primary weapon in
that's
the ring.
That's true. That's so true. No, he's really – he can't fight to me, honestly. I don't like Tom Molina at all. I don't think he's a good fighter at all. I mean, I really don't. I think he's going to be a gibbering idiot by the time the game is over for him. I really do. Because
mm-hmm.
he takes way
mm-hmm.
too much punishment. And another, speaking of way too much punishment, would somebody please, let's start a petition and just tell Shane Mosley to just let it go. What is he still fighting for?
Oh, man, I know that thing a couple of weeks ago, man, something was really wrong with that whole fight there against you know, David Arnesian or, you know, whatever his last name was. But
yeah,
to me,
yeah,
for that fight to potentially be for the number one contendership for the WBA welterweight championship, I don't know how in the world that happened.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I really don't. I don't either.
Well,
I don't get it.
You know that Mosey's name recognition came, definitely played a big factor into getting that fight to be in that position. You already know that. I mean, prior to that, Mosey won, two or three fights, low-level competition, and they were wins. I'm not saying they were convincing wins, but he got wins.
Right.
And once again, because of that name recognition that he has.
That's what it is. It's all about name recognition. That's what it is. Just like I tell you another guy in the same boat, Roy Jones. Roy is so, irrelevant in the game. He just can't accept the fact that his day has long gone. You know, I just don't understand these guys, man. And then, really, to be honest with you, when Roy was in his heyday, I'm one of the few people on the planet that never bought into it. I never thought Roy Jones was all that. What got Roy Jones over back in the day, number one, he managed himself so he could pick and choose who he fought. And he fought some of the – a lot of the guys he fought had other jobs. So a lot of the guys, they weren't full-time fighters. I remember one guy he fought, Rick Frazier, was a cop. He fought Tony Marshall, who was a mailman. Well, what I'm getting at, these guys had other jobs. And so you can drop your hands on these guys. You can do that little corny stuff he was doing with these guys. You saw Tarver had to chase him around for 3 years, and he just annoyed him into a fight because he tried to avoid him as long as he could. But speaking of the decline in this guy, is so bad. His last fight he fought Enzo Macronelli. Macronelli knocked him out, of course. Macronelli just fought a few days ago and got knocked out in the first round, which gives you a kind of a meter of where Jones really is.
Yeah,
are you saying that Jones did not have a great prime? He was not a great boxer.
He put it like this. He had a great prime on paper because he had wins. But I'm saying he wasn't fighting really anybody. He had three names on his resume to me of any real quality, and that was early Bernard Hopkins, James Toney, and there was one other person. I can't even remember who it is. He never really fought anybody. I don't even consider Virgil Hill. Virgil Hill wasn't even who I was talking about. That might have been the third guy, and I never liked Virgil Hill. He was like a one-armed bandit. All he threw was a left. He didn't even use his right hand. It was like he was like paralyzed on one side or something. If you look at old footage of Virgil Hill, he worked off his left constantly.
The thing with Roy Jones is, I mean, a lot of people knew about his, you know, overall abilities there as a boxer and, you know, his amateur background in the Olympics success. But it's like you said, he really didn't have that many challenges necessarily in the ring. Who was the guy that was there overseas that had that belt, all that time?
Oh, yeah. The boy didn't have anything to do with Darius Mikuselski.
Yeah, Mikuselski. Yeah, Darius Mikuselski.
The library now. Believe me, I'm a boxing historian. So, whenever you want to talk boxing, take my number and keep in touch. I will call in every show you have. That's why I didn't even know about you, but now that I do, I will be a regular. Trust me.
That one particular never really came to fruition.
Yeah, Roy didn't want it. Roy didn't want it.
Yeah.
Roy didn't want a challenge. This is what I'm trying to say. Through the years, he never really wanted a tough fight. His whole thing was, I'm going to tell you another thing that really made him that way, was the incident with Gerald McClellan and Nigel Benn. When he saw Gerald get hurt like that, that scared the bejesus out of him, and he tried to avoid any real tough fights or what he thought would have been tough for him after that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, he got kind of forced into the Tarver fight. And once that happened, That was the beginning of the end.
Just looking here, we got like less than 15 minutes here for the live show.
Cool. I'll be here.
Yeah, if anybody is listening on Blog Talk Radio, you can call in 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. We're about a couple weeks away from, you know, personally my most anticipated fight of the year with Keith One Time Thurman and
I got to one up you there. Did you see the one last weekend with Salido and Vargas?
Oh yeah, that was definitely fight of the year so far. Yeah, that was definitely fight of the year. But you know, this thing here with Sean Porter and Keith Thurman, I've been personally waiting for this fight for over a year and a half, and it should have happened.
Yeah, I agree. I want to see it too. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should have happened in March, but for some little strange reason over there in St. Pete. You know, Keith Thurman got into a little accident. And, Terrell, here we are in June. Were you able to find any accident report?
No, my man is digging deep. You said, did you have an actual accident report? My man, I like that.
I was standing next to the man.
Wow.
You hear me?
Wow. Wow.
All I know is, I was down there. And, you know, I was down there at the end of April, and I didn't find no police report.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, here we are. Up to this day, I haven't found a police report yet. So, you know, this thing is finally going to go down. And I can't wait because, I mean, you know, Thurman has been pretty much the guy at welterweight that has talked the most trash over the past few years, and you know, he really hasn't had a fight of this caliber yet. And I know a lot of people are saying that Thurman is basically going to take this. I do not see it.
I don't agree.
I don't agree with that either.
You know what? Far as I'm concerned, Thurman has been exposed to the last three or four fights.
You know, a couple of guys there that are local in the Tampa Bay area that have called in to say that Thurman has this, but I'm like, I just don't see it.
I really don't.
Sean
Porter, to me personally, is really crude. He's not really a polished boxer or anything like that, but he's strong and he's determined. And just that alone can get Thurman, because Thurman has shown a lot of vulnerability lately. And the last fight he fought, I forgot who it was. He was fighting the guy, hit him to the body, and damn near killed him.
Collazo.
That's who it was.
Yeah, Luis Collazo.
Yep. I was thinking Collazo, but I said no, it wasn't. It was Collazo. Man, he almost broke him in half. I was like, man, oh man. So I don't know, man. I think I'm kind of leaning towards Sean Porter on this one, to be honest.
I mean, even though, you know, Thurman was able to take out Luis Collazo in about six and get like a TKO victory, that really wasn't, you know, the fight that kind of like made me feel that, you know, Sean Porter had the advantage over Thurman. What made me think that was Thurman's fight against Robert Guerrero.
When he fought Robert Guerrero, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He struggled with him.
Yeah, the thing with Robert Guerrero was, like, Robert Guerrero was a taller fighter and had the longer reach. But just like this thing here with Andre and Willie Nelson, Robert Guerrero doesn't really use a jab. He don't really have a jab.
So Thurman
was able to do what he needed to do against Robert Guerrero. And then he scored that first knockdown, right? And after that first knockdown, he should have had the main advantage. He should have been able to finish off Guerrero. But after that, Guerrero was able to still be in there with him. He was able to still have a little bit of success with him. And by the end of the fight, the crowd was basically on the side of Guerrero, you know, because of his overall, you know, valor and courage to stay in the ring and be able to go through those whole 12 rounds. To me, I think Sean Porter, at first, Sean Porter kind of like reminds me at welterweight, and like Shane Mosley at welterweight, but the thing about, you know, this whole, moniker of Sean Porter being a, you know, rush, like he rushes people or, you know, he basically smothers people. He doesn't really do that, you know, all the time. Especially against that fight against Adrian Broner, he didn't really bum rush Adrian Broner like that. You know, he was chasing him to a point, but he was still, like, using a jab. He was still mixing it up against Adrian Broner. So, and the whole other thing about, you know, Broner, and a lot of people were talking about, well, Broner was able to knock Sean Porter down in the 12th round. I was like, well, what did he do in the first 11 rounds, number one? And number two, at the beginning of the 12th round, Sean Porter was just standing there. If he threw any type of punch, he wouldn't have been knocked down. It was just like he gave Broner a free shot. So, I mean, that's why I'm basically feeling about that particular matchup. I mean, I kind of like see Sean Porter taking advantage of this particular fight and being the victor there to win the WBA they call it Super Welterweight, but it's a Super WBA Welterweight Championship and eventually move on. I mean, I know that, you know, a lot of people are trying to see that, you know, Thurman will be able to move on and eventually fight Danny Garcia for a potential unification fight, but I just don't think that's going to happen. Hey, World Rank, you got any thoughts on it?
Nah, I agree with y'all wholeheartedly about the fight. But what I will say is that it's funny that we pull out a point for Thurman in terms of when he got hurt by Collazo, and then we don't recognize that he dominated most of the rest of the fight, but then we say the same thing about Porter and Broner. We say, well, you know, he got hurt, but he dominated the rest of the fight, which is true, but it's true on both cases. So I think, you know, we got to include both sides of the story more so.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing about it is with this particular fight, even though I'm like, you know, really, really, you know, anticipating this fight, there's a lot of people that kind of feel that it's going to end up being a sloppy fight. I hope that it doesn't end up being a sloppy fight. I mean, as long as, you know, Porter is able to stick to, you know, his game and make adjustments and be, you know, more versatile, then I think it'll be a, you know, a good pick and forth fight between those two.
Yeah,
I think you might be right with that point that it might be a bit of a sloppy fight, meaning there's going to be a lot of clinching, and that clinching for me is going to be coming from Thurman, because once again, you talked about this. You talked about so much stuff. The Mayweather fight is coming on. That's not going to happen. So once again, let's fight who's in front of you right now. Let's see that same thirst, that same clamor to be the best and fight the top 10, the top 5. The enormity of the moment is going to, I think, it's going to be part of the thing that overwhelms Thurman. He's not going to be able to adjust to that. And he's been in some championship fights. We know that. But this was different because this is a bona fide top 5 contender, you know. So that the pressure of to perform, the want to all that want I want to get in, I want to look good doing it. That's not it's not going to come like that against an opponent like this, because Porter is a rough guy. We know he's a prior football player. We know that, but his style is rough. His style just is not conducive to this. And then you just tee up on him. That's not going to happen. Like I said, it's not like Porter overwhelmed Broner, but at the same time he applied that pressure throughout that fight. Despite the fact that he got knocked down in that 12th round. And Porter's going to bring that same aggressive, smothering style in Thurman's first. And he has no choice but to react. And his best bet is going to be to hold and clinch. So that's what's going to turn into a likely ugly fight, per se, that we don't want to see.
Yeah, I can agree with that. If
I think what it was on the undercard, Abner Morris is able to go get another belt here against who's it, Jesus Cuellar.
Yeah.
In undercard, so you know that'll be like a good little matchup there to you know, get things you know, ready for that, you know, overall main event over at the Barclays Center there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So we got so we got like a few minutes left here in the live portion of the show. Numbers dial in to get in before the little overtime portion is 347-237-5539. Just real quick, I'm gonna go back to Vasyl Lomachenko and his win that he had to get the WBO version of the super featherweight title, and this is basically his second championship after just 7 fights. And one of the things that I kind of like seeing in the social media circles and like Twitter, Facebook, and whatever is that it kind of like, make some type of comparisons with Vasyl Lomachenko and another notable fighter that had an extensive amateur rank. No, I'm not talking about Guillermo Rigondeaux. I am talking about the middleweight Gennady Golovkin. And what a lot of them are saying, and I pretty much am in that same boat, is that even with the amount of fights that Vasyl Lomachenko has had, just 7, his resume or the type of fighters that he has fought in 7 fights is better than what Gennady Golovkin has fought over in his, amount of 33 or 34 fights.
I totally agree.
And, I mean, you do have, those fights against, you did have David Lemieux, you did have Gabriel Rosado. But Gabriel Rosado basically moved up in weight to fight Gennady Golovkin. You had, Matthew Macklin and Daniel Gill that Golovkin has fought. But even then, that was like in his, 31st and 32nd fight. While, Vasyl Lomachenko has fought guys that were already like, 25 to 6 or 35 and 4, or in the case of Gary Russell Jr. was undefeated when they fought. For Lomachenko to have that type of resume in just 7 fights, while Gennady Golovkin really hasn't had a solid fighter in 33, 34, 35 fights, kind of like speaks to Golovkin. And the thing that, I constantly hear about Gennady Golovkin is that a lot of these fighters don't want to fight him. And my counterpoint to that is this. You have a guy like Guillermo Rigondeaux, right? Rigondeaux, after he fought Nonito Donaire and got that win, he was basically shut out of boxing for years. He didn't have one fight against Joseph Agnesco. And then after that, he really didn't fight for a whole year. So you talk about a guy that really is avoided. Talk about Guillermo Rigondeaux. There's like another example. What do you think happened earlier this year when they had that, bantamweight fight between Carl Frampton and Scott Quigg, right? So after that fight, Frampton was able to win that. Did he step up to go up against Guillermo Rigondeaux? No. He went up against Leo Santos Cruz. So that fight is basically upcoming between Frampton and Santa Cruz when basically Rigondeaux, if he was basically at that weight class, he'd probably beat both of those guys. So, I mean, that's kind of like the point I bring up with Vasyl Lomachenko. He's basically... I would kind of like put him up there. If they're going to put somebody like Gennady Golovkin up there as far as like top pound for pound guys, you got to put Vasyl Lomachenko above him.
Yeah, I agree.
I disagree. And I'll tell you why.
I agree.
You lost to the level that Golovkin's opponents have been. You've already lost. Let's not look at skill. Let's look at the resume. So the resume determines what you actually are, not what your skills are against B level or C level competition. You fight Orlando Salido and you lose. That's not an A level fighter. That's a B level fighter. You lose to that guy. Now would he beat him if they fought again? Probably so. But he lost to that level fighter. Gennady Golovkin has proved that he's at least better than that level fighter. The Orlando Salido of the middleweight division, whoever you relate that to, Golovkin would beat that particular opponent. So if let's take out the what you see in the ring in terms of against who they're fighting, because again, Lomachenko falls in the same aspect as Andrade is. Look at who they're against. Now, when they stepped up to that next level, they didn't fare as much as they're looking good now. So you got to look at who they're fighting as opposed to what it looks like when they're fighting B or C level opposition. Gennady Golovkin has clearly beating the Orlando Salidos of the middleweight division.
He hasn't even seen a Salido in the middleweight division.
Exactly. And I'm not here saying Salido's a top A-level fighter. No, I'm not. But Salido has a good body of work with him now. He does have a good body of work. He went to Puerto Rico and smashed my man down, even up on his rise. Salido has some good wins on his record.
I agree. But Salido is the same level as David Lemieux. You know what I'm saying? Or whoever else. I'm trying to figure out who else Golovkin may have beat that might be that
Daniel
that
Gill?
Particular level. Nah,
Daniel
he
Gill
might.
Or
Daniel Gill, Macklin, Murray, all those guys are the same level as Orlando Salido.
That's the same level guy, but here's the thing, though.
That statement. I just want to say one thing about what we're saying right now, fellas. And that's one thing. Floyd ruined the game with that whole undefeated. Then nobody cares. What I'm getting at, to be great, there's nothing wrong with taking a loss. That's where you find out who's who. What I'm saying is it's not about winning every fight. Cause like I spoke of earlier, Roy Jones was winning fights. Mike Tyson was winning fights. And they definitely had their fair share of the bum of the month club. So and Golovkin is that right now. Golovkin hasn't seen any really world-class fighters yet to me, in my personal opinion. So the two are totally just like apples and oranges comparing him to Lomachenko. It really is. Lomachenko is fighting whoever you throw at him. Golovkin, like you said, the real guys supposedly in the division don't even want to see him.
All right. Now here's my thing about you know those two. I mean, of course, yeah, you know Gennady Golovkin has fought the Daniel Gills and the Matthew Macklins and all of that, but did Golovkin fight those guys after six fights in his professional career?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. Lomachenko's amateur career is almost 400, 500 fights. So
exactly.
He's basically a pro in the amateur division. We're not looking at someone who just came out, you know, who had a regular amateur career. He had an amateur career as opposed, like he's a pro. So the six fights doesn't necessarily matter. He has much more, I guess, what's the word?
I don't know. If you look at both those guys' amateur careers, like Gennady Golovkin only lost five fights in his amateur career. He's about 300+.
Yeah.
You know. So those two guys' amateur records are pretty much the same. You know, but the only difference is that when Lomachenko started his career, he started his career against guys that were already veterans in the professional game.
Exactly.
That had great records.
Right.
Gennady Golovkin, the guys that he was basically brought up slow. Y'all could continue to talk about that because I'm about to pull up the thing here for Gennady Golovkin here in a minute. So, go on ahead real quick.
Okay, so that doesn't necessarily mean that Golovkin wasn't ready for the same level of guys. His promotional team might have just put that upon him. You see guys that are maybe 30 fights in, but been ready since, like Errol Spence Jr. You can tell that he's probably ready for the top of the division,
but
he's being moved slower. You know, so it's not like, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean because Lomachenko got moved quicker, you know, that he's that much better. Golovkin's team might have just made him go slow for whatever reason. And Lomachenko also became a professional later on in his – he's older as Golovkin was when he started in becoming a professional. So, I mean, the level of competition, actually, it matters. You know, even if he gets put in early, This guy still had over 400, 500 amateur fights. So well, it's not like this guy. What?
No, I'm just going to say you have to know that there is actually a difference in professional and amateur boxing. The whole he just got that was his orientation into the pro rank with the Salido fight early on. He learned about dirty boxing and things of that nature, things that he wouldn't have been able to. He probably wasn't even exposed to in the amateur rank. So that was his orientation. He gets a pass with that loss for me, and he didn't lose badly. He just got wrecked up in that fight. You know, the guy was wrestling and so forth and so on. So, but I'm telling you, like somebody said earlier, if they did it right now, I think Lemachenko would run him out of the ring.
Now, that might be true, but again,
here's what I got here for Gennady Golovkin in his first few professional fights. I'm gonna run through the records of the guys that he fought, pretty much in his first.
I'm not a record
fight.
Guy, so I'll be
right.
Long.
Let's see. First one
that.
Here. He fought a guy that was 122-3. Then he fought a guy that was 6-9. Then he fought a guy that was 5-1 with two draws. Then he fought a guy that was 1-10. A guy 9-4. And two. A guy 12-3. A guy 10-4. Then a guy 19-3-1, and then after that he pretty much fought better guys a little bit in his resume. But even then, I mean, there's sprinkled guys in there that barely had 17 or 18 fights in their professional careers, and a lot of guys.
Yeah, but that's Lomachenko doing is the outlier, though. That's not a normal fighter. That every fighter goes through the progression that Golovkin went through, or Spence, or any prospect, they go through that. Lomachenko just went to it, and also, and this is a fact too. Lomachenko demanded when he went to the pros that he would fight for a world title in his first fight. Under pro rules, he couldn't do that, so he got a title fight in his second fight.
That's
so
true.
he demanded that he was in a position. We don't know. I'm pretty sure Golovkin wasn't in that position. I think he was with the German promoter to ask for that. Lomachenko has, he had all the amateur records, a lot of amateur records possible. He had the ability to ask for that two top rank and top rank of guys. Mm-hmm. So he has it's a special situation with him. He's not the average fighter.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like him personally, and I've been watching fights for almost 50 years, and I've never seen anything like his career so far. The closest thing I can relate to a guy who didn't have many fights under his belt years ago to Fort Duran was this guy named Davey Moore, and Davey Moore had a belt at the time, and I think he had somewhere around 10 fights like Lemachenko. But when he fought Roberto Duran just about killed him. So,
Yeah, Gary Russell was a great amateur. He had 25 fights before he fought
Lomachenko. You saw what Lemachenko did to Gary Russell. And I saw that. I called that fight. Because Gary Russell was another one, hasn't seen any quality his whole career until then. Now, when you were speaking of B-level fighters, he's a C-level fighter to me. He will not – he's got good management. That's all I can say. Because they line him up with bums constantly.
Well, I think that's going to, change a little bit pretty soon, because his last fight with Gennady Golovkin was against Dominic Wade, and Dominic Wade was a guy that was, under the banner with Heyman, Al Heyman. So I think that that could kind of open things up a little bit as far as the middleweights that are, within that division, because, I don't think Golovkin and it is going to get something here with Canelo anytime soon. And to flip on that, the thing with Canelo, while he did, relinquish the WBC middleweight championship belt a few weeks ago, while that was kind of like a business move in order to get more money in a potential contract against Gennady Golovkin in the future, he is dealing with another fight that is outside the ring.
kind of like wrote a little article on it on the CHCOnSports.com. So if you go on to thechcOnSports.com, you'll be able to check it out. It's like Canelo's biggest fight, maybe outside the ring. And that is in dealing with in Miami against All-Star Boxing. All-Star Boxing was, you know, his previous promotional company before he got on with Golden Boy Promotions.
Golden Boy,
and the thing is, and the thing is that what happened is Canelo signed a contract with All-Star Boxing that was a four-year deal with the provision that if Canelo won a world title, that would extend the deal that he has with All-Star Boxing.
Okay.
Now, he did sign a contract with Golden Boy Promotions pretty much around 2009-2010. But he already had a world title during that time. So he should have been formally under contract with All-Star Boxing. And so at that time around 2009-2010, All-Star Boxing did pull up a lawsuit on Golden Boy Promotions, but they kind of like put it off to the side a little bit. Now that Canelo has basically risen up to be, you know, the biggest draw in boxing since Floyd and Pac basically retired, now they're basically suing for $27 million. And in the state of Florida, if they're able to win that fight, I mean, win that case, not only are they able to win $27 million, they may be able to get up to three times that amount.
Wow.
Canelo and Golden Boy Promotions would have to be able to get through all of that. And Canelo was saying that, well, you know, when I signed with Golden Boy Promotions or, you know, or saw the contracts, they were all in English and I didn't really understand English or nothing like that. But if that's going to be the case, I'm not necessarily sure that's going to fly in court. So, you know, they basically started those, you know, court proceedings this previous week, and I think it's continuing into this week. But if All-Star Boxing is able to win that case, that would severely hurt Golden Boy Promotions in that aspect and could severely delay a potential mega fight between Canelo and Gennady Golovkin.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't even know about that deal. Unbelievable.
So, if you check the article on BCHTOnSports.com, it, you know,
but
basically gives like a rundown.
Real quick, you have my number. Please call me after we're off air so I can get more information from you anyway, because I want to be able to, you know, I need to know the schedule of your show and all that kind of stuff. So I'll definitely be keeping in touch with you guys, you know, around. Yeah, and you got my number, so this is great. This is great. I'm telling you, that was some good stuff. I didn't even know about that.
Because, I mean, at first, you know, before this whole court thing came down, I mean, Canelo and Golden Boy basically did a business move by giving up the WBC belt because they kept the belt. And still went on with the mandated fight between him and Gennady Golovkin. They basically had about a few days to negotiate a fight. If they didn't, it would go to a purse bid. If it went to a purse bid, percent Golovkin. In a business sense, that wouldn't make much sense for Canelo's team because Canelo is a much bigger draw than Gennady Golovkin. So it's like, why keep the belt, have it forced to a purse bid for them to basically negotiate the fight to be in September, and no matter what the value would be, it would be 55-45. I mean, he could basically get 65-35 or a 70-30 split.
We talked about that in the past.
It's a rare thing when a
fighter is able to transcend that belt. And this is one of those, albeit political, business reasons, but yet it's true. Canelo is bigger than the belt at this point. And at the same time, there's an inherent risk in going to a fight with Triple G, who's supposedly the bigger man. So from a business side, you want to protect your fighter's interests. And that's why we're seeing him vacate that belt. Because, you know, hey, and it's a shame because we've been hearing that they're so close to making the fight and getting past these negotiations. Now it's not so clear. It's not so clear. And it's funny because Triple G was the mandatory for Canelo. So once
right.
he, from the a customer side or a fan side, oh, he's the number one contender? Oh, they're fighting next. Not so fast, my friend. Not so fast.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so many different angles and nuances of boxing that people just need to be able to understand that what goes out, the fight outside the ring is so huge these days. And like I said, Canelo at this point, is he the number one figure in boxing? I guess he is. You know?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that's one of the things there to, you know, look into in reference to your potential fight between Saul Canelo Alvarez and Khabib.
Well, that was interesting. That was good information because I didn't even know about that.
Yeah. So, basically on that note, that's, you know, one thing that I wanted to cover here in overtime. But, you know, basically going to close out this episode of the show. We'll catch it, be able to catch it. Same time next week, 7:30 Sunday night, pretty much on Father's Day weekend. Not really sure if there's like any, you know, notable fights for that particular week. I know that there may be some type of local thing over in the Florida area with one of the guys that I've interviewed on this show, Travis Walker. So I'm going to try to get some updates on that. So you catch, you know, any updates on the Facebook page, The Boxing Source radio show, or, you know, go on Twitter, The Boxing Source, look for The Boxing Source on Twitter to get those updates up. And in the meantime, be sure to catch our sister shows here on the MRN broadcast channel with the cohort of Futon Sports Tuesdays at 8:30 p.m. Here with the execution of Matthew Long. And basically, I would say, like, in a couple of months or so, we will be starting up the CHG Firestorm Football Talk Show on Wednesdays at 8:30. So be sure to catch those. And like I say at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, folks, I'm out.
All right.